Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak to Debbie Gibson. Debbie Gibson is an American singer, songwriter, actress, and record producer. She rose to fame in the 1980s as a teen pop idol known for her catchy melodies and energetic performances. With hits like Electric Youth and Foolish Beat, Gibson became a cultural icon and continues to inspire fans around the world. She's appeared on Broadway, London's West End, and has made numerous television appearances. In 2021, she released the album The Body Remembers, and in 2022, released Winterlicious, a holiday album. She is bringing her acoustic youth, songs and stories from the Electric Youth Era tour to Buffalo State Performing Arts Center on October 12th at 8 p.m. Tickets are available at buffalostatepac.org. In this interview, Debbie and I speak about being a cultural touchstone for so many people, the experience of the Acoustic Youth Tour, the diversity welcomed in her audiences, and how she has stayed inspired as an artist and a musician. I hope you enjoy my interview with Debbie. Debbie Gibson, it is so nice to meet you. Thank you so much for chatting with me this morning.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Yes, yes, yes. So I wanted to start off the interview by saying that everyone that I've mentioned that I was going to be speaking to you was so excited, and they all sort of seem to have like core memories of, oh my gosh, Debbie Gibson, I danced to her song at my, you know, dance recital when I was young, or I remember my neighbors had the Electric Youth perfume bottle, or someone said, oh, my friend was on tour with her, and I think it was The Sound of Music. What is it like to have that kind of relationship with your fans, that they all have these kind of core memories of you?
I mean, that's amazing. I didn't do Sound of Music, but I did every other musical in the whole world, so it was probably one of the other ones. No, it's incredible. It's incredible that people have this like point of reference to me and my music. And, you know, I often hear from people who may have gone through kind of a difficult time, an isolating time in their childhood. And it's like the hopefulness in the music was something that held their hand. And then, yes, all of those things, you know, this song was playing at the dance when I kissed my first boy, and this, I had somebody say at a meet and greet the other day, you made me gayer faster because I kissed a girl at the dance and realized I was gay and Foolish Beat was playing. Like, that's hilarious. But yes, people have these core memories, and people to this day, You've Lost in Your Eyes is their wedding song. And so like, it's remarkable. I pinch myself constantly that this is my life.
Absolutely. I bet. And, you know, from what I understand, the Acoustic Youth Tour coming to Buffalo on Saturday, October 12th, is a tour that's kind of bringing back some of that music and some of the song stories and songs sort of associated with that time. What inspired you to do the Acoustic Youth Tour?
You know, I kept wanting to come up with unique ways to celebrate the moment. Like, it's easy to do a post and go 35 years today. And I'm like, no, I want to celebrate all year, because it does feel like this particular album. I mean, the debut album was a big thing and I did a few acoustic shows, but like, this album felt like a defining album. And like you said, like people have so many memories attached to it. And my audience loves the stripped down versions, as do I. Like, I just think, you know, I remember meeting Lionel Richie. By the way, you're just reminding me of the story, and now I'm going to tell it in my next show. I met Lionel Richie on a plane, like around this era, the Electric Youth era. And he said to me, hey, are you working on any new music? I'd love to hear it. So I took out my Walkman, I played him music. And he said, you know, I said, oh, the demos are just basic. He said, a great song will sound good on a tin can and a banjo. And it's true. So like, these songs are songs that I wrote on the piano or wrote from my head to paper. And if you can break a song down to its bare bones and it stands up, it's a song. You know, these days, the writing sometimes has to do with the programming, you know, the synths, the beats, and that's its own thing too. And I made an album a few years ago called The Body Remembers, and it's very modern, but I always make sure, even within the modern production elements, I could sit at the piano and play it, and it's going to hold its own, the chords, the melody, the story. And so, you know, it's just the most intimate way to connect with an audience. And it's the hardest thing I ever do in my life, because it's me and my energy. It's like, you know, I do have a few elements of arrangements and things in there, because it can get a little sleepy if you're you know, I'm on stage for between an hour and a half and 2 hours every night. You know, primarily it's acoustic, and I touch on most to all of the songs every night from the album. And also, like, it's different every night. Sometimes I'll slow a verse down and it'll be a little more storyteller and take it out of its tempo. And other nights it'll be like a full on thing. And it all depends on the energy of the crowd. It's like the energy of the crowd, like the crowd's a character in this show. For like, you guys are gonna, whoever comes to this show will definitely kind of steer which way things go too. So it's really fun. It's my, I call it my high wire act, because it really is like anything can happen at any moment. It's so much fun.
Wow. I think in my sort of early research, I understood that when you were first kind of writing songs at 16, your parents turned your garage or the garage into a recording studio for you. When you were sitting in the garage, did you ever think all of these years later, you would still be performing and singing all of these songs?
You know, it's so interesting, because that was the dream. And I was so laser focused on making the music great with the vision. Like, and that's, you know, that's kind of always been my thing in life. I hold tight to visions, but I don't just sit there and do, like, you know, The Secret, like I'm sitting in my house driving a Porsche and a Porsche appearing like that.
Wouldn't that be nice if that did happen that way?
It would be so nice. I get really proactive about the vision. I work backwards from the goal, you know? So in addition to demoing all those songs, which, here's what I knew. I knew if I could get past the gatekeepers, and my mom, my late great mom, who managed my career for 25 years, knew this too. I was like, if I could get past the gatekeepers, I'm a music fan and I love this music. I know that my peers will love this music. I just knew that it would resonate, because I knew it was pure. I knew that I was writing from a perspective of, you know, very universal things that people were going through. And I knew quality pop music, because I was such a fan. I was such a fan of radio. I was, you know, Casey Kasem's Top 40, like, going to church on Sunday was terribly inconvenient because it disrupted the Casey Kasem countdown. And so I didn't know how I was going to do it. I knew that I had a tenacious mom, and I knew that I was tenacious. And together we just like started, and we just kept going. I mean, it's so remarkable. When I look back, I think we did the impossible. Yeah. I mean, truly, we didn't have any connections, or we made the connections and we just didn't stop, you know. But I knew as I was writing something like Lost in Your Eyes, and I talk about this in the show, I started playing it, and I'm big on like channeling. I think if you get in a zone, the universe goes here. And so I remember sitting at the piano and that intro started, it's like it started playing me. I didn't start. And I knew it was I didn't know what was going to happen with it, but I knew it was magical. I just knew. I felt it.
Wow. How have the songs shifted or changed over the years even playing them? Has it gone deeper? Have you ever said, oh, I can't sing Electric Youth again, right? How has it shifted for you?
I mean, it's never shifted to that, because I'm someone who's like always like, I can't believe I get to do this song for people and people know it and embrace it and love it. Like, so I never ever tire of any of the songs, but I do reimagine them. I mean, like, there's a song off the album called Should Have Been the One. That's kind of a band jam, you know, live drums, like based on my love of Billy Joel. But that one has become almost like painstakingly heartbreaking in my delivery now, because it really can. What's fun about the songs is that they were written from a time of like innocence and puppy love. And so they were simple. But now if you fill it in with all of your emotion, and the way I play, it's just it becomes an entirely new experience for me and the audience. So the songs keep themselves interesting by evolving in that way.
Wow. Are all of the songs on the Acoustic Youth Tour original songs?
I mean, so the songs off of Electric Youth are, and the songs off of Out of the Blue are. I do a few covers. I don't know if, like, a lot of my audience kind of follows me on social media. Some people, so if you don't want a spoiler alert, you could not listen now. Ready? Don't listen. or you know what? I'll just say I pay tribute to a longtime favorite female artist of mine who has left us fairly recently. I touch on just a couple of other little surprise cover moments. But you know, like 95% of the music in the show is just all my originals. Yeah.
That's amazing. This concert also includes some stories that'll be shared with the audience. How does it feel to share these stories with all different audiences? And will some of these stories appear in your upcoming book?
Oh, 1,000%. I mean, some stories I touch on and I go, the rest will be in the book because we don't have all night. But I get pretty personal and pretty vulnerable with the audience. And I always say, I get a lot of people writing into my website after, which I love that people take the time to do that, saying like they loved the music, they loved the show, but they loved the communing, they loved the stories, because that's like the great unifying factor. We all have stories about our lives and sense memories and different things occur to me on different nights. So some things I want to tell the audience again and again, but it also becomes different and it depends what kind of mood I'm in. Mm-hmm. But I get pretty personal about my life and about where the songs came from. And again, sometimes I connect to different things in the moment on each night.
I think that that's amazing. So if you've seen it in another city, come to Buffalo and see it again, because it'll be a completely different show.
1,000%. And by the way, the venue dictates it too, because like there's outdoors in the heat and everyone's like in this certain kind of mood, or there's, there's like more of a performing arts center vibe where it's like a little, everyone's really seated and quiet. There's been more kind of rock and roll venues where it's like clubby feeling, but we're doing acoustic, so that takes on its own thing. Like, so every single show has been vastly different.
What have the audiences been like at the Acoustic Youth Tour?
I mean, it's, you know, the other night I literally had a 9-year-old and an 80-year-old. Like, my oldest Diamond Debhead is turning 80 this weekend. My Diamond Debheads is like my diehard, core group of supporters. And, there are kids that are introduced to the music by their parents. There are obviously a ton of what I call children of the 80s there. And there are people, like, there was this woman last week. She was this gorgeous woman dressed so elegantly, and she was giving standing ovations in certain, and then there are people that are just kind of like down home, there for a great time, or there with their partner, and just, you know, there's all kinds of people there for all kinds of reasons. What I love about my audience is I feel like everybody knows why they're there. It's not like a bandwagon-y thing. It's people, I think people work really hard to save up time and to save up money and make time to go to concerts. So people are there with like a purpose, and a lot of it too is to connect within my community. I have a lot of diehards that didn't know each other, and they are now friends through my music, and people meet up in different cities, and people fly in from all over the world. I mean, it's like really unbelievable. So it's really a diverse group. And one thing you can bet on when you come to one of my shows, I always say it's the come as you are party. We're an inclusive, dress how you want, be who you are, identify as anything, and be there for the music and have a great time. And that's a big, big unifying force at one of my shows.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd love to ask, your last album was The Body Remembers. That was in 2021. You also released Winterlicious, the holiday album, in 2022. What keeps you so creative after so many years in the industry?
I mean, my manager, Heather, and I like to say, like, releasing those two albums back to back was a bit aggressive because we do it independently. So, like, even now I'm sitting on like 1,000 photos to go through for my calendar that, like, it's calendar time. Like, it's always like, you know, working on the book, the calendar, the shows, putting together a love songs show for February. I'm doing a little run and I'm going to be announcing some more things for that. And then there's going to be the book and the book tour and another show with that. So like, it's a lot, but I do love that, especially the diehards who keep coming back, they always get something new. But you know, with the Body Remembers, it had been like 20 years since I did an original pop album. And I had done a lot of Broadway in that time and other like themed albums and stuff like that. But I hadn't done like my statement, my pop music statement in a long time. And that ended up being a double album, you know, so it was a big undertaking, but it really took on a life of its own. And if I have something to say, I want to say it. And then I just kind of can't help myself. And I want to say it at the most high caliber level as possible. So like the attention to detail on that album was extraordinary, but the response was extraordinary. And I feel like, you know, it's not like I could run out and make another album. Well, I did with Winterlicious, but after those two, you know, it'll be, I'm sure, another couple of years before I do that kind of thing again. But that album to me, it can live for a long time. It has a life. I'd love to even release another single or two from it because a lot of people are just discovering it. But I don't know. I've always been that way. I've always wanted that creative stimulation constantly. And I just get bored. I talk about it in the show too. Like the song No More Rhyme is essentially about what happens when you're bored. What happens when like nothing is particularly wrong in your life, but nothing's like lighting you up. Like that's literally my deepest fear. So that's what I lean into.
That's fantastic. You mentioned Broadway, and in addition to your pop career, you've done a lot of musical theater with Broadway credits, including Les Mis, Cabaret, Beauty and the Beast, and Grease. And you also did Grease on the West End. Yeah. Has all of that Broadway work inspired some of the concert work you do, or has it taught you maybe to connect with audiences in a different way? Or I'm just interested in the influence on your pop career.
Yeah, I mean, so one of the most terrifying things I ever do is like open any show with a ballad, which essentially like that's what I do in this show. I start quiet. And theater trained me to have to be able to like go into that zone, that calm and that introspective internal place, because in theater you're not thriving on that, you know, crowd screaming and adrenaline, and you have to learn how to control and focus your adrenaline, which is not my forte. But theater has taught me how to do that. And then it has taught me to, you know, use parts of my voice that I wasn't using. But weirdly, and you'll see it in this show, a little hint, when I do theater music, it organizes my voice because it was written for vocalists. Like it was written in a certain way. So it's been such a gift. And when I was a kid growing up in New York, it was my very first dream to be a Broadway star. So to be able to have those first 5 years of my pop career and then debut on Broadway in Les Miserables, one of the greatest musicals ever written, was, you know, again, like every dream coming true for me.
Amazing. So in addition to Broadway, you've done film and TV, you're writing a book, you write music. Of all the art forms you practice, what's your favorite one?
Oh gosh, you know, there are so many. Obviously, like it's almost like all roads lead to the live stage experience. So like, you know, when I'm on stage and I hear like a background vocal part that the background vocalists are doing or that I'm delivering in this acoustic, whatever, I remember like I'm an arrangement geek. So I'm going to go to like the obvious is the live is like the best experience. But of the other experiences, I love arranging. I love the Tetris puzzle. That is a great arrangement. And like you listen to like the old Quincy Jones records, his productions and arrangements, and how it could be like even, you know, in the case of Billie Jean, it could be drums and a bass playing and it's perfection and it feels huge, but it feels focused. And like, it's your way to like guide an audience into how you want them to feel and this journey you're taking them on. So like background vocal parts and little bells and whistles in the percussion that I always love to like highlight a lyric with a little castanet here or a little. And so I spent so much time and enjoyment on that lives on for me. Like I hear things and I remember I'll be, you know, hearing one of my records and I'll sing the string line along with it. Cause I just, that's so imprinted in me. It's such a joy. And then like, I've created some movies for Hallmark, some that I've been in, one that I haven't. I love that art form too. And would love to get more into that now that I've kind of got, I'm rebuilding my touring career, but would love to dip back into acting and, you know, on camera and on the stage.
Fantastic. So, like I said, the Acoustic Youth Tour is coming to Buffalo on Saturday, October 12th at the Buff State Performing Arts Center. How do you hope people feel after leaving the Acoustic Youth Show? What do you hope they say on the car ride home?
Well, I hope that they got something they didn't expect. You know, I always hope people kind of got to process out all the emotions, feel all the feels. You know, I often hear people laugh, people cry, people dance, and I hope they feel like a shift in their energy, whereas they go back into their real life out of the bubble of that show, that there's just some new approach to their life, that they're in a better mood, that they feel something, just like some kind of, I don't know if gratitude's there, but something more than they came in with, you know, that's really the hope. I hope that if they're there with a date or a partner, that they had some great experience that they get to, you know, kind of look back on and imprint. Cause I'm into giving people moments. That's the thing. I think that life is very challenging for a lot of people right now. There are a lot of things threatening to divide people. So I hope this kind of unifies people and just taps into something and just moves people in some way, whatever way that they were looking to be moved.
Thank you. Those are my questions. I'll certainly put all of the information for the tickets and the VIP sales in the show notes, but I always like to end an interview by asking, is there anything you feel left unsaid or anything that you'd like to share with our listeners before we go?
Oh my goodness. I mean, really just, you know, the message of the song Electric Youth and that evening is, you know, people, when I was a kid, tried to dissuade me from doing certain things because of my age. I always felt that no matter what circumstances you were born into, no matter what numerical age you are, I'm not into any of the isms. So racism, ageism, any of it. So, you know, I guess I just want to say, like, the theme of that song and the theme of the evening is really about, you know, like my song Over the Wall says, like, I want to find out something more. It's really about breaking down those walls and doing the things you love and not letting people project onto you their own limitations. And so even whether you come to the show or not, I hope you get that message today.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. It was really nice.
Thank you. You too.
That was my interview with Debbie Gibson. I hope you and your family will see her Acoustic Youth Songs and Stories from the Electric Youth Era Tour at Buffalo State Performing Arts Center on October 12th at 8 p.m. Tickets are available at buffalostatepac.org. This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Sarah Potter engineered this episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides posted bi-monthly on buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like this show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios.